You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Chanti.
And I'm Lynx, and you're listening to Muses.
Enjoy the show. Hi, everybody, and welcome to today's episode. It is an interview, and this is one that I've been wanting to do for a very long time. I'm very excited. It is with an incredible woman named Alice Carbone-Tench. Alice is a writer. She's a blogger. She's a podcaster. She's a mother. And she's a cook. She is one of the most fascinating women I've ever followed on social media. And then we got to have the chance to actually interview her. She has these amazing blog posts, her most recent one called Woman, Mother, Daughter, From Grief and Guilt to Compassion and Gratitude, and other blog posts like On the Passing of Time and In the Right Place at the Right Times. Obviously, just telling by those titles, you could tell that I wanted to jam out with her. She also has a really cool book called The Sex Girl. So she's an author as well. Did I mention that? And if I didn't mention this already, Alice is a rock wife. She's married to Ben Montench. Yes, the Ben Montench of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. I'm so excited to give you a look into Alice's beautiful brain and everything that she's doing in her life right now. And I can't wait to chat with her more. Just a little thing about the quality of the interview, the sound quality. I goofed. I did a goof, and neither of us on either of our ends had microphones, so the audio is just through our computer, and it ended up being a little echoey. Hey, it happens. That's podcasting. You live and learn, but I tell you that the quality of the interview, the quality of the conversation, hopefully makes up for the subpar sound. And we'll make it up to you guys one day because I'm going to head out to LA with Lynx and hopefully we'll interview Alice in person and continue the fabulous conversation. I won't spoil it or even tell you what we talk about today, but trust me, you're going to like it. Enjoy the show.
Let's do this.
Okay.
Yes.
Alice Carbone-Tench.
Yeah. Welcome to the Muses and Stuff podcast.
Thank you. You know, I'm glad that you asked about the last name because I find myself sometimes pronouncing it in the American way, and I hate it because I'm basically changing my last name. It's so weird. Sometimes I introduce myself with Alice Carbone, mm-hmm. and that's not my last name. Yeah. It feels so fake.
Well, I'm French, so the English version of my last name is Lemieux, and the French version is Lemieux. So it depends on where I am, who I'm talking to. Sometimes it's Lemieux, sometimes it's Lemieux.
Yeah, okay. So you know the drill.
I know the drill. We're so excited to chat with you today. I've been a fan from the moment I discovered your blog, and then it's just kind of grown from there.
Yeah, and Shanti turned me on to your book as well, and that it was really amazing. And we're both very excited to have you on.
Thank you so much. I'm really, really happy to be talking to you. Amazing. Thank you for asking.
Of course. So we like to start our interviews by going back and asking, you know, what you were like as a child. Were you an avid reader and a writer?
Oh God, as a child, I was a weird child. I wasn't really an avid reader or a writer. I think that I wanted to escape reality so much that I really built my own world with, you know, games. And even when I was a little older than a child, I always had this need of escaping reality. So I wasn't writing, but I was out of desperation, very creative in a way. Mm. So yeah, I really wanted to be. I remember, I don't know if we are the same age approximately, but I grew up with in the 90s with 90210, and it was a big deal. And I remember creating a fake 90210. I lived in this small town up in the Alps, which is really not Beverly Hills. And I remember creating this parallel reality of 90210 with my neighborhood friends. My brother and I were Brenda and Brendan. And there was a little park across the street from us. And to me, that was the beach. And there was a little ice cream parlor, and it was their diner. I lived in the reality for real. Like, I'm not kidding. That was, I would call my brother Brendan. So not a reader, but I definitely tried to escape somewhere else. And then I think the reading came after.
Quite the imagination. My little brother and I would watch old VHS tapes of New Kids on the Block, and we'd fight over who would be Donnie.
Whatever is creativity, I was ashamed of that for a long time because it wasn't anything really intellectual. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I talked to Ben, and he was way more intellectual than I was when he was a kid. And I felt ashamed for a long time that was my escape at the beginning, and not, I don't know, like a Moby Dick. But, you know, but that this freedom is stopping to be ashamed of things. And so, yeah, that's the truth. It was 90210 and not Moby Dick when I was a kid.
I definitely played 90210 as well with my friends. And, yeah, TV shows, they definitely had an impact. I think maybe that's our generation as well, you know, more being in front of the TV.
Yeah.
Instead of being in front of the Snapchat. Yeah. Kids today, I don't know.
Well, people that have Snapchat, happy about it. I'm trying to resist.
Yeah.
When you were like a preteen or a teen or anything like that, did you have posters up on your wall?
Yeah.
Like, yeah? Who was up on your wall? Who were you looking at?
Kurt Cobain.
Ooh. Yeah.
And I think that was, and oh my God, I still have in my childhood room. I was in Italy like a month ago. James Dean. James Dean and Kurt Cobain.
Oh, ever nice. Actually, Lynx just pointed to her Kurt Cobain poster that she has on her wall right now.
I love that you still have it. I don't think, do they still have posters these days?
Well, I got a poster from the documentary they recently made about him. So that's where mine came from. It's the movie poster.
For Montage of Heck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it, by the way.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah. So yeah, Kurt Cobain. And those are good times when we had posters on the wall. Mm-hmm.
Did you grow up in a musical household?
You know, that's the other thing I would like to say, yes, but not really. And I, you know, my grandfather was an opera singer. And, of course, he had to, you know, pay rent and food. So that wasn't his profession, but he did it, and he was really amazing. I have old records of his. That part, I would say, musical, but... And my mom liked classical music, but I don't think that music was ever, it's, I don't, you know, it's, I think I had a disconnect. A part of, I would say yes for one, from one point of view, because I see my mom now and how much she's here at the moment. This is what I talk about my mom. They loved music for sure. But I don't think, I don't remember being in a musical environment.
Interesting, but you seem, you got there somehow.
Yeah, I got there somehow because music was, you know, that's actually how I learned English. I learned English listening to Nirvana. I learned about Leonard Cohen listening to Nirvana because I didn't know who Leonard Cohen was. Wow. And I remember listening to Penny Royalty for the first time, and there was really no internet at that time, or I don't know, probably there was the very beginning of internet. And I didn't know who this Leonard Cohen was, so that's how I became familiar with him. I'm on my time with everyone. I have very bad posture. Was probably through, I was lucky to find friends in those years who were into music and into that kind of music that opened for me a new world of
a new language too.
Yeah, I knew that. That was, I'm forever grateful because I always thought that English was so beautiful and was the perfect language for rock music. There's something about the musicality of English that was really fascinating to me. And that's how I then asked my parents to go to English school.
That sounds fascinating.
So I think it was through friends. And now, you know, the more I can observe my family and my parents from afar and from another point of view and with a different sentiment that is, you know, used to be shame, regret, or there was really no positive feeling or sentiment towards that part of my life. And now, I don't know, we're probably just growing up, or probably just having a daughter, but there's so much compassion and gratitude that I can see things I didn't see before. So that's why I'm saying, no, I have my mom here. And she's passionate about music. Music that is different from what I like, but regardless. So probably was a little musical environment, but I was so much into my own world that I didn't notice. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the answer. I don't know.
Cool. So when did you discover a passion for cooking?
That was extremely, that was really, really, really recent. Oh. And by recent, I mean probably last year, maybe 2 years ago. I, you know, if you read, you're familiar with my writing, but for those who aren't, I've been suffering from an eating disorder since I was really, really young. And I'm in recovery now, but for a long time, food and the kitchen were absolutely my enemies. So, And I grew up in Italy, where cooking is a big part of life, and not just for nutrition purposes, but it's really a big part. My grandmother cooked. It was a fantastic cook. My mom is an amazing cook. I always rejected that part of my heritage, and it was through therapy. I'm doing currently this therapy called Clean Language. And
Clean Language
is I'm actually doing this therapy with the creator of this discipline. Is basically they ask you questions it's called clean because with questions they don't want to influence what you're going to say. So instead of asking you, you know, are you sad because this thing happened? They ask you, where are you sad? They want you to create your own answer without contaminating the answer with a word or with a feeling, with an idea. So I've been doing this therapy for now 2 years, and it changed my life. And one of the tasks that one day we were talking about policy and about spending time just on one task and not trying to escape whatever I was doing with something else. And I don't really remember how the kitchen came about, but I remember that she asked me, why don't you, you know, when you're peeling an onion, just for an example, I think the example was the onion. Just stay there with the onion, you know, touch it, smell it, notice how the blade is cutting the onion. And I discovered that I actually loved to cook. I discovered that I loved to put together ingredients and create something. And it gave me also a sense of safety because I was making my own food, so I knew what was in the food, which is something that, especially here in the United States, it's something that really matters to me. So it was kind of a coincidence, or probably not a coincidence. I don't really believe in coincidence anymore. And it was amazing. It was just a discovery from cutting an onion. And then I found out that I was pretty good at it, and that I liked what I ate, so I kept doing it, and I started really having fun. And I'm not cooking as much as I did because the 7-month-old doesn't really leave much room for extensive cooking. But yeah, that's how I discovered it. It was very, very recently, and here with Ben. So yeah.
Wow, so it's like turning something that was once like an area of real difficulty for you into something that's really positive. And we really appreciate you, you know, being so honest and open about this kind of stuff, because we can all really relate to it in one way or another. And after Lynx and I read your book, I think that was one of the most like open and honest conversation that her and I had with one another. And it was really healing. And I don't know if you ever, I know probably, you know, when you write a book, well, I can imagine that it's a very cathartic and healing experience. But did you ever have any idea that it would be affecting other people, you know, like us, and opening up these dialogues and having such a healing effect on others?
No, because that book, first of all, I need to tell you the truth. I was ashamed. I've been ashamed of that book for a long time after it came out. And not because really what was written in it, you know, some of it, yes. But there was something about it. I wrote it, and this is nothing secret. I wrote actually an essay, I think, about it. The title was never supposed to be The Sex Girl. And that's a big regret that I have. The title was supposed to be Beyond the River.
Oh.
And there's a reason why. And I think that I wanted to impress someone. I did it for the wrong reason, and I accepted the change of title, which I think that's why I was ashamed. I didn't think that it would heal, because first of all, it wasn't born as a book. It wasn't. It was really a diary that I was writing. And you know, that part of in the book that says someone read it, and someone read it and he thought it was a book, and I fell in love with him, and it was a book. It turned out to be a book. But I write things so candidly in that book. that I, you read it, so you know that there's a paragraph when I talk about vampires, because when I was reading the book, I was really into True Blood. I was so ashamed of that. I thought it was so childish, writing about vampires. And it was actually because of Stevie Nicks that about her writing, when I got to meet her and to be familiar with her works and to actually spend time with her. And her authenticity is so disarming that was she really helped me shift the perspective on my writing. And until I shifted the perspective on my writing, I couldn't really see the effect that my writing could have. So even the book, no, it took a long time to, first of all, not be ashamed of it anymore, but also to think that, you know, maybe someone can actually see themselves in that, in those experiences in a way or another. And what makes you vulnerable is actually what is going to connect with other people, I think, regardless of what you're doing. You know, it can be something that you cook or a song that you write or a painting or something that you teach. When you put yourself out there and you feel vulnerable, I think that in a way or another, you're going to affect people. And so probably that's what the book, I hope so, you know.
Well, it
did. It was a bestseller, so I don't think it influenced the world. But I'm glad that it did, you know, for the few people who bought it, and it's not for sale anymore because I got my rights back and I will put it out in the future. I'm glad that it did. I'm really happy that you guys read it. How did you become familiar with the book?
I think I started following you on Instagram.
Okay.
And from Instagram, I went to your blog, and then from your blog, I got connected to. Oh, now I'm gonna sound like a big fan, like a big fangirl, Alice. And then I found a podcast that you had talked on, and I just liked it. And I think I was in a time in my life where I needed to like figure out some things for myself. I was having some problems with managing my drinking, and I was having some issues with my own weight stuff. So it just kind of happened at like the right time. But you're so much more than just the book too, right? Like, you have this amazing way of interacting with people through your blog and now through your Instagram stories, and you are so relatable and you are so like sweet and stuff. So you know, it's not, you're not just that book either. You're a lot of things.
Yeah. Thank you.
So I just went down an Alice rabbit hole, I guess. But and we're also very like, we also really love music. We're huge music fans. We're huge Stevie Nicks fans. We're a huge fan of Benmont. And so I think it all just kind of like it was just meant to be.
It's just meant to be, absolutely. You know, I don't really think that things are disconnected from one from the other. And it would, you know, I truly believe that we may not discover it right away, but there is some kind of a flow and some kind of a direction that things go. Someone told me a long time ago, and this is a sober thing. I think that we were talking about God. I was really angry at that time. And that someone told me that they see God, or however you want to call God, because that's not really the point of whatever you call higher power or spirit, that they saw God as a helicopter ride, in the sense that this woman went on a helicopter ride for the first time over LA, and she's from LA. She said, I saw LA for the first time from a completely different point of view. I could see things that, you know, from standing down on Sunset Boulevard, I would never see. And so there's this sense of a higher view of things that we don't see right in front of us because we can't. Mm-hmm. While you are above, you see the whole plan. in a way. We can't see the whole plan from here. So this is really not a, again, God or non-God. And I think that there really is a bigger map that we can't see from where we stand. You know, from where you stand, I know we're standing now, we're both in the room, and we can see from here to the wall. You know, that's, if there's a window, probably you could have a glimpse at what's outside the window. But that's it. It's pretty limited. So I'm really starting to live that way. There's a bigger map that we have no idea where it's going to take us. So just to go back to how we got connected, there is a connection. There is, it works in a certain way.
Yeah.
And it's quite fascinating, actually. You know, it kind of makes it worth keep exploring, you know.
So, speaking back to like the 90210 days and everything, did you always picture yourself moving to California? Was that a goal of yours from childhood, or was your move sort of unexpected? Did you never really expect to leave Italy?
Do you believe in that manifestation, like you manifested yourself there, or was it just so happened?
No, you know,
coincidences.
I don't know if I believe in manifestation. Sometimes California wasn't a, I never thought it was a possibility. Now, if you live in the Alps, in the Italian Alps, or pretty much anywhere, California is pretty cool. You know, you guys are from Canada, so I don't know what the influence that American TV has on people. But in Italy, we kind of grew up with the American dream. And California is a dream for everyone, and there's a reason why. But I never thought it was a possibility. It's very difficult to move to the United States. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I lived in London. I was a translator. And I lived in London, loved London. That's where I wanted to live. I knew that I wouldn't live in Italy. That was something that I knew from quite early. And when it was really pure, I came to California for one of those exchange programs. When I was 17 or 16, I was in Long Beach.
Cool.
And, you know, of course, I loved it. Who doesn't love California? You come here, you see what's around, and you fall in love, period. It's really beautiful.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
But I never thought it was a possibility. Came back, you know, finished my high school, went to college, and moved on to London. When I was in London, I got really sick with my eating disorder. And, you know, alcohol and drugs were starting to affect me, but not nearly as they did in, you know, later on. So I was really sick, and I came back to Italy. I went back to Italy to be with my parents because they had medical care. And then from then on, things went south. So it was a very dark time when I got a job offer to be a translator for 3 days. I had just been accepted for a master's degree in London. So I thought, I'm going to LA, do the interpreting gig, and then I'm going to stay there for a month or two because this school is California. And then I'm going to go back to London. And I never went back because I got offered a job and things started moving from there. I worked as a journalist for an Italian press agency and things kind of happened. But no, I never thought it was even remotely a possibility.
Well, that's good.
But it's California. California is a dream for everyone. So of course you say, would you want to live in California? Hell yeah. But yeah, it was a very, very unrealistic dream. It just happened. And to be honest with you, I didn't like it at first. I didn't like LA at first because I came here alone. I didn't know how to drive an automatic car. No. I really didn't. That part of the book is real. I didn't know how to drive an automatic car. And I cried so much that day. I will never forget that. And, you know, Los Angeles is a very lonely place if you don't have the right people around you.
That's
and
right.
If you don't find your vibe.
Yeah, I had a friend who moved from Toronto to LA. She was there for 2 years, and she said that it was lonely.
It can be, and if you don't have people, good people around you, because it's also very easy to find really the wrong side of town. It's a beautiful place when you discover it. It's a beautiful place full of art that people often don't know about. It's a really rich, very vivid place in the world. And I'm sort of grateful that I'm here now, but no, it wasn't a plan at all. At all.
Well, Links and I have never been, but because our podcast network, who we've recently joined with, they're out in San Francisco, and then our awesome woman, Allison, who is putting sponsorship into our show. She's out right in LA, and just through this, we've met some amazing people, and so we're looking forward to when the time is right, heading down there and checking it out ourselves.
It's beautiful. You know, really, hit me up when you're here, because there are places that are not usually the places that are advertised, and LA is a much richer city people think.
We would love to. I'm so excited because we have.
There's much more than the Hollywood sign and Hollywood Boulevard and Venice Beach. I can do that.
Good. It's like how Toronto's more than the CN Tower and, yeah, you know, Yonge and Bay Street.
So I spent 3 days. I have a friend in Toronto. He's a Christian. And I met him on a chat in Italy.
Cool.
And I haven't talked to him in a long time, but he lives in Toronto. And one day I was actually sent to Toronto for a gig. I had to, it was a horror movie that I had to cover. I remember it was an awful movie. I remember a carousel that they would set on fire. I don't remember what the movie was, but I was in Toronto for like 5 days. And I don't really remember everything, but I remember, and I met my friend there for the first time after years and years of virtual chat. So yeah, I was only in Toronto for 5 days, so I'm not really familiar with the city.
Likewise, if you ever come here, we'll show you the part of Toronto that you might not have seen before.
That's a deal.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Canada and Canadians, you mentioned before Leonard Cohen being a huge source of inspiration. We love him. He is like just Canada's pride and joy, I would say. And actually, before I even started listening to Leonard Cohen's music, I was into his poetry.
Yeah.
You've met him, correct?
Yeah. He's the reason why I'm here.
Oh, okay. Well, can you tell us something that you may have learned during your time that you did spend with him? I'm sure that's no easy question to answer now that I've just said it out loud. What did you learn from Leonard Cohen in a nutshell?
I have three things that came to mind very, very suddenly, and they are humility, patience, and grace. These are three things that Leonard Cohen absolutely has had, unfortunately.
And
enormous amount of charm. I wrote an essay about this. This is not private. That man was charming as hell. Like, seriously, the day I met him, the night I met him at this listening party, I will never forget it. When I met him in his dressing room, and I was wearing a white coat. And he, I got to him, he took coat off, and he said, "How are you, darling?" I am that. So, yeah, but charm is the other characteristic. But, yeah, humility, patience, and grace. His manager, that then became my manager for a while, whenever I would complain that my work wasn't going anywhere, nobody wanted my book and all these complaints, he kept reminding me that it took Leonard 13 years to write Hallelujah. And then when he finished it, nobody cared about that song. Nobody wanted that song. It was Jeff Buckley that made that song popular. So after 13 years of writing one of the most amazing pieces of poetry ever written, but so after 13 years of writing a song, nobody wants it. And Leonard is really the example of just hanging there no matter what, keep doing, because he never had the acknowledgement and recognition that, in my opinion, he deserved until he was pretty old. You know, and it's what an example of just persevering and being humble and just keep doing it, you know.
Now I've heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord, but you don't really care for music, do you? Like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
not that famous. His poetry was not that, to this day, I don't think he's enough recognized as a poet and as a writer. So yes, those three things. Every time that I complain or that I ask, like, you know, when is going to happen? When is going to happen? Why doesn't it happen to me? I remember about Leonard and grace, patience, and humility. He was a master at those three things.
That's amazing. I think I told you, Alice, that I'm a school teacher.
Yes.
And I get my students into all kinds of music that I like.
And what do you teach?
I teach elementary school, so grades like kindergarten to grade 6, depending on where they place me. Next year I'm going to do a grade 2-3 split, which is like age 7 and 8.
Yeah.
And it's French immersion. So all of the subjects, but in French.
Fantastic.
But one year, last year when I taught grade 6, so that's 12-year-olds, I had this student who played the ukulele like you wouldn't believe. And they learned that I really liked Leonard Cohen. And so for the school talent show, they learned Hallelujah.
That's so beautiful.
And I bawled like a baby during their performance.
That must have been so special.
Oh, just thinking about it now.
That's so great. You're also turning them on to, you know, amazing music.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's how it started. That's something that, and I don't want to steal time for your questions, but
no, not at all.
Now, especially now that I have a child, that's how you raise decent human beings. And by really opening their minds very early to that kind of stimulus, I don't think that you can only bring good to the world if you are open to those, to art and to music and to, instead of, unfortunately, what is going on right now. And there's not enough of that. There's not enough of that. And, you know, teachers are the most underestimated, underpaid, and undervalued people in this world, in my opinion. Because I was lucky to have fantastic teachers who really planted seeds in my head. And then, you know, I was free to do whatever I wanted with those seeds. But they had been planted. If they don't do it, and especially here in the United States, you guys in Canada, I'm sure, are much better. I'm much better off than we are right now.
It's better, but, although we just got somebody in Toronto who's trying to kind of mess with some of our curriculum and stuff and try to set us back.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a kind of a fight going on here as well.
Well, I hope you guys can win that fight because because whatever, they're our future. And I know that it can be cliche and it's naive, but they are our future. So if you don't plant good seeds in their head, how can you expect them to do something good in the world?
You know what? I'm so optimistic. I love what I'm seeing in the schools. The teachers are all quality, quality, quality. The students are just, like, they're so inspiring. They're inspired. They're aware. They're awake. I'm hopeful.
I'm glad to hear. I'm really happy to hear. And I'm hopeful too, even though it's really difficult to be hopeful these days.
Yeah, it is.
So going back a minute, back to your book and back to music, one of our favorite things about the book was you sort of start every chapter with a song. And
yeah.
I think both Shanti and I, when we read it, I listened to each song that you sort of recommended for each chapter, and
that was the purpose. I'm so happy to hear.
Yeah, it was great.
We made a playlist.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Got, you know, some favorite songs in there. Heard some new songs. We were wondering about, like, your music experience. What are some of your most memorable concerts or, you know, music events that you've been to?
You know, oddly enough, those years, of my, you know, the forming years. And it was because of different things. I'm sure that being an alcoholic and a drug addict didn't help my, I didn't really go to many concerts when I was in Italy at that age, until later on. Well, I will not forget that Patti Smith was my first concert, which is not a bad way to, it's not a bad way to start. And then it was more the environment that I was in. And even though I was really not okay, I wasn't really always present, but the environment was the music of the 80s, and it was dark, new wave, and The Cure, the Nick Cave, and everything. It was the world I was in. It was the club. I was always at this club that was dark. It was like going back to a time machine and really go back to those years. So actually, until later on, it was later on that I started going to concerts, and I think that the most amazing experience that I had at a concert was Leonard Cohen, I must say, and I saw him here, of course, in the United States. I'm thinking about, I went to some heavy metal show in Italy that not really a spiritual experience. It was more when I came here through Ben, I must say, that I was lucky, blessed to be exposed to music in another way. So I started going to a lot of shows here. And I was, when I moved here, I was a journalist and I was covering some music too. So I was going to shows to cover and to write about them. But it wasn't until later that a show was a transforming experience. And Leonard Cohen was a very transforming experience. Have you ever seen him live?
Yeah, we both missed out on that opportunity, unfortunately.
Lynx has seen almost everyone live. She has seen, like, name someone, she's seen them live, but we both unfortunately missed that.
Yeah.
He was at his age, it was a 3-hour-long show. He would get down on his knees and sing to the audience like he was singing to one person.
Oh, my God, that sounds
That crazy. Energy, that he was just real. I wouldn't. A 3-hour show sounds very long. Even for my favorite band, after 3 hours, like, okay, I'm ready to go home. Not with Leonard.
No, not with Leonard.
He's So yeah, that was probably the very first. I call it a spiritual experience because it was.
Everybody knows. Everybody knows that. Leaking, everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long stem rose. Everybody knows.
For sure.
She was. Stevie Nicks. Come on, I mean, seriously. Yes. She's, well, she's something else.
Yeah.
She's something else. Yes, Stevie Nicks is another.
I think she's everybody's spirit animal.
Yeah.
It's got to be a meme somewhere. Stevie Nicks is my spirit animal.
Well, I run around like a spirit in flight. Is fearlessness. I will not forget this night. Dear my world, dear my wife, where is the reason? Don't blame.
And I saw just recently Ben was playing for this benefit for autism, this David Stills, and I saw Patti Smith again.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's something in that woman who really, she can really connect.
Yeah, she's actually my favorite concert that I've ever seen as well.
She's really special. There, I remember being a teenager and seeing her. She was probably in her 50s at that time. And this energy, and I thought that was the first time that I actually saw a woman and thought, wow, look at that woman. She has no makeup. She's not showing her body. She's not really sexy. Even though I thought that she was.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, but she's not sexy what they kind of promote as sexy. She was just the real deal. You know, and so that was my first approach. That's actually probably the first time that I thought, look at, you know, women can be this. Mm-hmm. You know, women don't have to be starlets on TV or wearing shorts. And,
oh, no.
Women can be this. How cool. So, yeah, Patti Smith, I think, is on the very top of my list of special, inspiring people.
Yeah, definitely.
On stage.
Real women wear pineapple shirts and overalls and cactus. What are these links? She's wearing she's wearing long johns with cactuses on them in the summertime.
I know. Do you follow her on Instagram?
Oh, Patti? Yeah. I was just going to ask you the same thing. Yeah, she's
awesome. She's on it. She's probably my favorite Instagram because just the way she writes reality at the end of the day. It's real.
Yeah, and you learn something every time she posts something. She's phenomenal.
She is, and she's very graceful. I was very scared when I met her. Right? I usually don't ask a bunch. You know, I don't get starstruck that often anymore. But with her, I was shaking, and I told Ben, "Listen, I never asked you to, but can you please introduce me to her? Because it was a big deal." And I told her, "You know, you were my first concert when I was 17. And I was shaking, and she was very graceful. She's obviously very shy. But yeah, I think that was, I was a real fan when I met her.
Amazing. Cool. So as we're talking on this podcast, and we're just like so happy to have you on here, you were sort of ahead of the game. You were already on top of podcasting, I think, years ago now, because you actually had one of your own, which is really neat. What are some things that you learned about, because we've certainly learned so much through this 2 years of doing this, what are some things that you learned either about yourself or anything throughout the process of podcasting?
First of all, I'm really proud of that podcast because it was born from nothing, and I didn't really know that many people. Many of those artists were kind enough to just trust me and come over to my little apartment on Beachwood Drive. I'm actually in the process of eventually putting back online all the interviews because I take them offline. I don't know why, but they're actually pretty good interviews. There were like some pretty, pretty cool interviews with great artists. So they're going to be back online soon.
Well, that's exciting.
Because it's a shame. They were like really interesting conversations. And now I'm not really praising my job, but some of those artists were really, all of those artists, they were so generous with their time and with their stories. And it's really a shame that they're on a hard drive and not there for people to listen to. So I will put them online soon again. I learned that, first of all, there's no stupid question. If you have a question, the question is not stupid. I remember asking to introduce the question, I would say, I know that this might sound stupid. And someone, I don't remember who was that, they said, no question, there's no questions. There's nothing such a stupid question. So.
Oh, that's hard for me to remember. I did a big interview that meant a lot to me like a couple of weeks ago, and at the end I was like,
no,
those questions were stupid.
No, there's no such thing as stupid questions, and I can't.
Thank you.
Because, yeah, you keep questioning and doubting yourself, and if you have a question, that question is legit, period. You know, then it cannot be interesting to someone, but who cares? You know, if you have that question in mind, it means that you need an answer, you know? So that's the one thing. And never to be afraid to ask people, because you'll be surprised of how much people, A, want to help, and B, are interested in talking and in discussing and in discovering. So, and that I really loved the process of researching the artist that I was to interview, that I was about to interview. I really loved it. I was doing a very thorough research, and I loved it. I learned so many things about history and music and literature and movies and this country, the United States, that I didn't know through researching these artists and actually through listening to what they had to say. You know, not just going through the interviews, but then I had all this question and I could edit the file. But really my interviews, I think, got better when I stopped thinking too much about the following question. And actually, this is the most important thing. I had a list of questions, but then you never know where the conversation is going to go. And perhaps you're not going to ask all the questions that you have in mind. Sometimes what comes out of a conversation is surprising, and it takes you places that you didn't think it would. And that's, to me, what's amazing about having a conversation. Because an interview is basically a conversation with, when you talk to your friends, you don't make a list of things that, what are you going to ask her for our coffee today? And so you never know where it goes. And that's, to me, this spontaneity, is that how you pronounce this? Spontaneity? Yeah. Of a good podcast. Of course, have an idea of what you want to, you know, how you want to shape it, but then let go.
Yeah,
and some of these people just kept talking to me. I remember Jackson Brown. I wasn't as close to at that time. I just, you know, now he's you know, my daughter's godfather, so
he's so cool.
But at that time, I really didn't know him that well. And I realized that he wanted to talk. And so he's someone that I really remember he was just opening up. And I stopped and said, oh, my God, I have another question. But oh, my God, this is going too far from where I wanted to go. And I said, why do you want to go there? Just listen. You know, you have him sitting on your couch.
I'm going to rid myself of help. In the shade of the freeway, gonna pack my lunch in the morning and go to work each day. And when the evening rolls around, I'll go on home and lay my body down. And when the morning light comes streaming in, I'll get up and do it again. Amen. Say it again. Amen.
And him and all the fan of Jeff Garland. Jeff Garland gave me this amazing interview where he just so full of things to say. And I stopped looking at this thing that I had in front of me with the 10 questions that I wanted to ask him. So, yeah, just there's a lot of – it's scary. It's scary because you never know about what if I don't know what to ask after that. But when you stop obsessing over your performance, which is what I was doing, the most amazing conversations can come up, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, and if you're not open to that, you're going to miss out on some great discussions.
Absolutely, yeah. Because if you're not, it's just like if you're not there when you do something, and you are in your head thinking about what am I going to do next.
You're reading my mind. I was just going to say, because, you know, when somebody is sitting on your couch beside you and you're like, wow, this is actually happening. But you're so in your head, all of a sudden it's over, they're gone, and you've missed it. You weren't there. So
yeah, I missed some of them, actually. I missed a few of them because of that reason. And
it serves as a
reminder, you know, as a lesson, but I did miss some of them. Over that reason, the self-obsessing.
It's hard. You have so much. Is my recording, is it really recording properly? I can't wait until after a while to go back and listen to it and make sure that both of our voices got recorded on this thing. Did I get all my questions? And then you have to just go, you know what? Breathe. Whatever happens, happens. It's fine. And we're here. Amazing.
And then you listen back to those conversations, and probably they're the ones that don't necessarily follow the pattern that you had in mind are maybe the most interesting and spontaneous and creative and full of inspiration. That was my experience, at least. And I missed out on some of them. So,
well, I'm excited to listen to them all.
Yeah, when they come up, we're definitely excited to listen. And we can definitely relate to the, you know, it being independent podcasting. You know, we're not famous comedians or anything. And then going back to what Leonard said, patience, you know, humility, grace.
So I looked at your podcast before saying yes, but, you know, yes, last night I was going through it because I wanted to, you know, be more familiar with your work. And that's amazing. I'm actually a huge fan of yours because it's not, especially because it's not something that you do full time. And there's so much, I respect your work and those people who have just a passion, they keep, and they do it so much. And your podcast and your work is so rich and so inspired and so authentic that it's a huge, to me, that's the main ingredient for anything that you do. I really love what you guys do. I'm a big fan of yours, actually.
Thank you.
That means so much.
Yep, and it's just been growing organically with time.
When did you start?
And we're very proud. Pardon?
When did you guys start?
About a year and a half to 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been, you know, no network, nothing, just putting it out every single week because we love it.
Yeah.
And after, about a year and a half, then the network came and, you know, the sponsors are starting to come and the connections are happening, but it's because we've been patient and it's been the right connection. You know, we've said no to networks before because we wanted to remain, we would rather remain independent and in full creative control than to have more listeners who weren't authentic. So,
that's what I always thought. And that's why I wrote on my blog for a long, instead of, I got so many rejections for essays and interviews in the past. I remember writing this. I interviewed one of the big, actually the number two of the Hells Angels of California it was probably like 5-6 years ago. And I was terrified. I remember I contacted his attorney because, you know, it was a big deal. Yeah. And the guy had just was, at that time, he was on trial for arson and murder. Like, it was a big. And it was very scary. I was going by myself to Ventura, and there were a lot of rules to respect. You really rarely interview a Hells Angels. And he had just left the club. And, you know, this guy is one of those known as the filthy few who are supposed to be those who have killed someone. But, you know, it's serious stuff. If you know something about the Hells Angels, it's not just a...
Yeah.
So, I don't know what I wanted. But anyway, I didn't interview this guy. I went to Ventura. I went twice because the first interview was so... The guy was... We were talking so much that I went back the following week. And it ended up being this long... interview, 17,000 word interview, very exclusive because nobody has ever interviewed these people. And I remember, I'm very proud of that work. It's online. It's a very deep interview. The guy really opens up, and which, by the way, they don't do with women. it's a no, they don't do with women. And the few things that, all the things that you, you know, see around by Hells Angels are with men. And I tried to give that interview, not even to sell that interview, because I just wanted that story to be out there to pretty much every publication, from the New York Times to New Yorker to the LA Times and every possible, and nobody wanted it.
Wow.
And I ultimately published it on my blog in two episodes, because it's a very long story. But and then I remembered, you know what, I'm just going to write for myself and be authentic and write what I want to write about. And I think it's lame, just because people didn't want your work, you can just put it out yourself. And the other part is that I want the freedom to write what I feel like writing, whether an editor tells me that it can sell or not. You know, I want to write about it and I put it out there. So there's kind of, I really value those who make that choice. And I'm happy for those who can sell their stuff or put their stuff out there and on the big media. But I really admire this kind of work. So
yeah, if you're doing it to like make yourself happy and it's a subject that interests you, I feel like only positive things can come from it anyway, because you're doing it with positivity.
I absolutely agree with that. I think that actually is the way to do things. Mm-hmm. Nothing bad can come from something that is done from the heart.
Yeah, exactly.
It may not make you a billionaire, it may not become a bestseller, but nothing bad can come out of it.
And then you're attracting the audience, I think, that you truly would want anyways. You know, an authentic audience that cares about you and what you're doing and sees your heart. And you know what? Isn't it better to have sort of a smaller audience that really cares than just have a number that doesn't really mean anything, that didn't really like care about what you're doing? And just based on like, you know, the really awesome and authentic, you know, videos that you're posting, because you've kind of taken your written blog into almost like video blog through your stories. Like, it seems like you've got an audience. I mean, there's no way for us to tell on the other end, and you don't have to say like, you know, but it seems like you've got a great audience that cares about the awesome things that you're doing and saying.
Yeah, I mean, those stories, sometimes I really feel like I'm ridiculous, but I'm really having fun with it. I don't, you know, I just have fun with it, and sometimes a little bit of humor. I have sometimes people who email, that write me privately saying, oh, stop complaining. The other day, someone on Facebook actually wrote, you know, I'll keep following you, stop talking about politics, start to behave. But I'll keep following. And, you know, this woman wrote, behave.
Wow.
I'll keep following, but, you know, go and live with go and be a mom.
Wow.
Behave. So, but never, like, recently, since I really started to write from the heart, not that I wasn't writing from the heart before, but there's something about the most recent work that I'm doing that is really just, I don't know. I don't know how to describe it. It's no more genuine than the rest of it. But for some reason, I've never connected like I'm connecting now with people who read me. And so many people email me and tell me their stories. And be honest with you, I don't get a cent as of now of what I write. Hopefully I'll sell a book soon. But I'm not paid. And the reward that I get when one person emails me, either from my mailing list or through the blog or through Instagram, to share this story after they read an essay or saw or heard something that I said, I don't want to be naive and selling your, you know, making money out of what you love is a beautiful thing. There's nothing wrong with it. That would be a lie if I told you that, oh, I don't care about money. It's part of it. But the reward that you get from someone sharing their story with you and telling you thank you for saying that, it's as equal as the money that she would make. Someone that they messaged me saying, oh, thank you for telling me about shingles, I went to get the vaccine. Ridiculous. It's not deep at all. But there's some kind of a reward. He said, oh, you know what? I shared about how shitty I feel, and
it helps someone else.
It's a different kind of reward.
It's a different kind of abundance than financial. You can be totally abundant in your life and it not have anything to do with typical, like, you know, financial abundance, monetary. Yeah. But you know what? Hey, like, look at all of the incredible things that you've done and where your instincts lead you and stuff. And who knows what's going to happen. But we take our message from Leonard. We continue to be patient. We continue to put out the stuff from the heart. And you just never know.
I think that you guys will see the worst of me, Ben does. And so many times I've been very angry with, okay, I'm not doing this anymore. That's it. I'm done. And then you keep doing it because it's what you have to do. And today I'm really beyond grateful that I kept doing it. And I still have that voice in my head that sometimes tells me, yeah, you're doing it, but, you know, you're not making money. Yeah, you're doing it, but you're not, nobody really knows you. Yeah, you're doing it, but you're not famous. That voice is always there. And I think that probably we all have that voice that tells you, but you know what? Yes, but I keep doing it. And the more I keep doing it, the other voice gets louder that tells you, keep doing it. Keep doing it. It's just for yourself. Keep doing it. You know?
Keep doing it.
So you have, you know, built an audience, and we're definitely part of that audience. We're curious, where do you hope to go next? Is a cookbook a possibility?
More video stuff
or bringing back
that
podcast.
Cute face of yours. Yeah.
More interviews.
Cookbook. No, I don't think so. I really like to keep cooking something that I like to do that has nothing to do with work. I tried. And the process of writing down the recipes and it took away all the fun that I have cooking. Most of the stuff that I cook has no specific, quantity. It took away, I have like 50 pages of the beginning of a cookbook. And first of all, I didn't enjoy writing it. And it took away the fun from cooking. So I really realized, no, it's not what I want to do. I'm happy to share a recipe on Instagram when something comes out good, because to share it as a fun thing to do, but nothing more than that. I'm almost done with putting together a collection of published and unpublished essays most of them are recent. There are a few from the past, a few never published, a few that were part of a tentative book, food memoir that it never worked. So it's a collection of essays about being a woman, being a wife, being a mother, trying to be herself, to learn, you know, try to live without a label of being woman, wife, mother, daughter. So that's my, because if I go back and read all my stuff, I can really see the journey. And as I was reading it, I really thought, well, that's a pretty cool journey. And I would like to see. So, and then I was starting really having fun putting these essays together, re-editing or writing an introduction to all of them and remembering, when did I write this? I'll tell you this thing, and I don't want to go too long. It can be boring.
Not at all. No, and don't worry. We only have one more question after this, so. Go ahead.
This is a very cute thing that it just happened a few days ago. I was putting together the essays, and one of these essays was the one that I wrote about Ben that I published. It was the for Valentine's Day. It was the ode to my husband. It was this beautiful essay about love. I realized, so I was thinking, you know, we just came up on our anniversary, the interview anniversary. We've been together since the interview on the podcast. And I was reading all the essays, and I realized that the month before interviewing Ben, I had written this essay about love, and it was called Let's Talk About Love. It's not online anymore because I'm re-editing it and I'm putting it on the book, so it's offline. And in those days, I had just interviewed Marc Maron. You guys know that podcast, what?
Yeah.
WTF, right? Okay.
Sure.
I tried to have him on my podcast for a long time, and he finally said yes. So I went to the garage where he was in the podcast at that time, and a beautiful, beautiful interview, which, you know, will be online again. I had a crush on the guy. I had a crush on the guy, and I opened up, and he didn't really, it wasn't correspond. Return, how do you say? Not correspond, return. Anyway. And I was heartbroken. I felt ashamed. I was heartbroken. And so I wrote this essay about love. I had no idea that I believe 18 days after that, this man would come to my apartment, sit down, talk to me. His name was Ben Montench. And that the following week, we would go out for a date and we would be together for the rest hopefully of our life. And I thought, how cool, like, to see things going back and realize everything had a plan. And in those days when I wrote about love, my heart was broken. I was so heartbroken and so sad and so angry. I had no idea that what was waiting for me.
Yeah.
You know, this guy didn't, his feelings were not the same. And what was waiting for me was so much better. And so that's how this collection came about. And I thought, wow, look at this. If I go back, look at what I wrote about time, you know, the passing of time, 3 years before the essay that I wrote last week. And it kind of all fell, you know, into place. And so, yeah, that's what's ahead. I shot this collection. And,
it's like you can now take that helicopter over everything that you've already done already and really see how everything was connected, like taking, like just stepping out of your own life, really, and evaluating it.
It's mind-blowing. And that's
mind-blowing, yeah.
So that's what's ahead. I'm finishing up this, and then I'll hopefully try to sell it and to see if an agent is interested or, you know, hopefully we'll be
so, because that sounds amazing. It really sounds amazing. And it's a damn good thing that that crush wasn't, and I just thought of the word, reciprocated.
Right?
Because look at this.
It tells you, you never know.
The beauty that came out of it.
And then you forget when you are in that moment. You know, if you're suffering or having a hard time, you really don't care when the people tell you, you never know, you know. Fuck, but you never know. Sorry, I can't talk. I shouldn't. but you never know. You really never know.
Oh, amazing.
So that's what's ahead. And then, of course, I'm going to put another cookbook, a collection of essays, and I'm going to put back online the interviews.
Yes. You can't wait. This is going to be amazing. Good for you. This is really exciting stuff.
Thank you.
Well, one more question about love and all of that. You know, you make incredible meals for both your daughter and Ben. And I remember one thing you captioned was only the best for Catherine. And so you definitely show that love by creating these meals. And I was thinking that, you know, that's like a five language of love, right? Have you ever taken that test, the five love languages?
No. What?
Okay, so you just go online and you type in the five love languages, and then you can figure out how you like to give love and how you like to receive it. And they are acts of service, which are like cooking meals for the people that you love, showing them that you love them by doing something for them, physical touch, words of affirmation, gifts, and there was the fifth one – Can't remember what the fifth one is. Oh, quality time, spending time with somebody. So I think maybe number one for you in giving is probably acts of service. I wonder what your receiving is. Like if you prefer to get gifts, if you like acts of service, words of affirmation. Do you know off the top of your head?
I know that it's very difficult to receive for me.
Oh.
It's really difficult. So even from people that I love, I really struggle with, when Ben gives me a gift, I feel guilty. I feel, I don't know, it's really difficult for me to receive. So I want to say gifts.
But maybe that's
his way. That oh my God, this is the most, this is one of the most difficult questions that I've ever been asked. what are the options?
So gifts, quality time, acts of service, physical touch, and words of affirmation.
Acts of service probably would be the first one.
So that would be like doing the dishes or building a chair or...
Yeah, I would be, that would probably be the first one, even though it makes me feel guilty as well. But that, yeah, when you does the dishes or when my mom is here, my mom has been here for a month to help us until we find it in. And she's here, she's been helping me, and because I find it so difficult to accept the help. So I would say that's the act of service.
Yeah.
Acts of service are the main one. Physical touch is tricky, and probably words of affirmation, even though God, it's so hard for me to receive. Now you make me think about I struggle to receive.
Maybe quality time spent
because it's quality time would be the other one. Quality time, I don't feel guilty about.
Yeah.
Quality time, I easily accept and enjoy and embrace. Yes.
Cool.
That's probably the one that makes me feel less guilty of all.
I'm going to send you the link, and you can use it. And just let us know where you rank, just for fun.
I will.
Not that we'll post it or anything, but just for, like, just...
No, I absolutely will.
For your own
thing. Because now you're really...
You might surprise yourself.
That.
You might surprise yourself with what you actually, like, want or something. Yeah. Anyways,
yeah. Send me the link and I'll keep you posted on that.
Cool.
So one last question.
Yeah.
You guys do so much for others, and we were wondering, what do you do to spoil yourself?
Self care.
Massage.
Yeah.
That I haven't been able to have because of the shingles, but we do have an amazing girl that comes home once a week for a massage. Massage and good food. I must say that those are the two things that we treat ourselves with good food and that kind of relaxation. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Good. I like massages.
Me too.
Yeah. Alice. Thank you so
much. Thank
you. I loved it. It was really amazing. You guys are, I love what you do. Now I'm a even more big fan, bigger fan of yours.
Oh, thank you so much.
Good. It's so nice to just get fired up when you talk to somebody, and you know, we feel inspired, and we hope that you feel inspired, and it's just about continuing to support one another to just keep putting out love. And that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're putting out love. So thank
you.
And
also, you know what? I don't want to sound like a cheap feminist, but especially with women, in the past when I was younger, I always had a conflict, it was always competition with women. And I need to say, since I got sober, honestly, my relationship with women changed radically. And supporting women and just being a team with women is, if just women would understand that, how powerful it is to support other women and to be in a team with other women and to enjoy things with other women, we would be much more powerful.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So it's really an honor and a pleasure to be here with you and in support of the women. Yeah. So, at the cost of sounding like a cheap feminist, I don't care. I believe in that. And, so it's an honor to be here with you guys.
I don't care either, and we feel the exact same thing. So thank you so much for your time. It has been a definite highlight, you know, for me. And
we hope you feel soon.
Yes.
I'm going to rid myself of help in the shade of the freeway. Gonna pack my lunch in the morning and go to work each day. And when the evening rolls around, I'll go on home and lay my body down. And when the morning light comes streaming in, I'll get up and do it again. Amen. Say it again. Amen. I wanna know what became of the changes we waited for love to bring. Were they only the fitful dreams of some greater awakening? Been aware of the time going by. They say in the end it's the wink of an eye. And when the morning light comes streaming in, you'll get up and do it again. Amen. Caught between the
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.